Good morning, and welcome to Unifin's third quarter 2018 conference call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the presentation, we will open the floor for questions. At that time, instructions will be given as to how to proceed to participate if you would like to ask a question. It is now my pleasure to turn today's call over to Sean Glickenhaus of iAdvise Corporate Communications. Sean, you may begin.
Thank you, David. Good morning, everyone. I'm very pleased to welcome you to Unifin Financiera's earnings call. This morning, Unifin's new CEO will discuss the company's third quarter 2018 consolidated results for the press release distributed yesterday. If you have not yet received a copy of the earnings release, please contact the investor relations team at Unifin or iAdvise in New York at 212-406-3691 to obtain a copy immediately. Prior to introducing management, I would like to remind you that forward-looking statements may be made during this conference call. These do not account for economic circumstances, industry conditions, the company's performance, or financial results. As such, these forward-looking statements are based on several assumptions and factors that could change, causing actual results to materially differ from current expectations. Therefore, we ask that you refer to the disclaimer located in the earnings release prior to making any investment decisions. We're now very pleased to have with us today from Unifin, Mr. Sergio Camacho, Chief Executive Officer, Mr. Sergio Cancino, Chief Financial Officer, and Mr. David Pernas, Director of IR and Corporate Finance. Thank you for your attention. And at this time, I would like to turn the call over to Mr. Sergio Camacho for his presentation. Please go ahead, Sergio.
Thank you very much. Good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining us today. Let me begin with today's discussion by addressing some of the recent change in our management structure. I will then discuss the business trends and tendencies that we are seeing, as well as review the financial and operating metrics of the business for the quarter, and then provide an update on our share buyback program. As you have seen in recent announcements, the company has entered a new phase in its life. As part of a succession process, the Board of Directors approved my appointment as Unifin new CEO, a challenge I am more than happy and very excited to take on. Additionally, Sergio Cancino, who previously occupied the position of Corporate Controller, took over the CFO position so that we can work together to reach the various objectives we have for the company. Luis Barroso, former CEO, now assumes a new position as President of the Executive Committee, where he will focus, along with our chairman of the board and founder, Rodrigo Lewa, on continuing a strategic plan development for Unifin. We expect that this change will not only enhance the corporate structure and drive institutionalizations, these changes will also further generate value for our bond and shareholders. As the new CEO, I have a clear mandate to improve profitability of the business. In order to reach this goal, my mission is to lead and implement a strategic initiative that will enable us to more efficiently address the Mexican financial market by increasing our prospect base and improving customer relationships. For this purpose, throughout 2018, we have built a strong business and innovation team that has begun to shift our business model into a client-centric platform. This will allow us to satisfy the increased demands of our clients. We have also invested in IT infrastructure, the implementation of a new portfolio management system, and an enhanced CRM platform. And finally, we have begun the process of converting our promoters into advisors to be more a business partner than a sales promoter to the client, so that we may offer them the financial advice they need in order to give their business the boost and support they need. Regarding our business trends for the quarter, by the end of the quarter, we perceive a more dynamic period in terms of economic activity. The outcome of the Mexican election was positively perceived by local entrepreneurs, our target market, as they sense greater likelihood of a trade agreement with the U.S. and Canada being reached. This translated into a quicker decision-making process and consequently a pickup in the company operating metrics. In the near future, we expect less volatility in the overall business trends, now that the terms of the new agreement, the USMCA, have been announced and sentiment towards the agreement is considered positive. However, we need to wait and see market expectations once the new president takes office on December the 1st, and also see what is the outcome of the new airport consultation that will define perception by investors towards Mexico. Our goal going forward is to sustain growth at a healthy pace. without sacrificing the quality and financial health of our operations, but focusing more on the profitability of the business and investing intelligently to ensure long-term progress for the company. Now, let's take a look at the important changes that took place in the third quarter, including some of the new metrics we are providing. Total revenues increased 34% for the first time to reach almost 5 billion pesos, of which 91% were related to the leasing business, and increased 29% year over year. This growth was due to the company capabilities of repricing new originations, the recovery in the conversion process of our clients, and the pickup in revenues from past originations carried out by the end of the previous quarter. As I mentioned earlier, one of the main focus will be improving the profitability of the company. For this purpose, we're including two new metrics in the financials that will allow the market to track our progress in achieving profitability. Leasing yield and net interest margins, or NIM. The leasing yield is calculated by dividing the last 12 months of the lease income by the average lease portfolio, while the NIM is a division of the last 12 months of financial margin and the average total portfolio. The leasing yield in the third quarter ended at 37.4%. Over the past quarters, the yield has experienced a contraction, mainly explained by the extension of the average maturity of our leasing portfolio from 35 months in 2015 to 40 by the end of the quarter. By extending the maturity period, the rent amount to be received is divided into a higher number of payments which seem less profitable, hence the apparent contraction. However, the company is expecting the yield to improve going forward over the next few quarters, starting with the third quarter 2018 when compared to the second quarter of this year, when the yield reached 37.1%. It is important to consider that despite the repricing efforts in our new originations, with a larger nominal base, the margins are less profitable vis-a-vis our cost of funding, even though the gap remains constant. To give you more detail on our second metric, the NIM, let's move to the financial margin results, which reached 1 billion pesos, 14% increase year over year. Financial margin as a percentage of total revenues improved versus the second quarter. However, it declined to 20.2% when compared to the third quarter of last year. The deterioration in the margin versus year ago was due to the decline in our leasing yield and higher interest expenses, which rose 46.6% during the third quarter. Only 149 million pesos of this higher expense were caused by the increase in the cost of funding, whereas 1.1 billion pesos of this increase were related to the incremental debt. If you recall, in the second quarter, we conservatively drew up existing credit facilities in anticipation of any potential credit crunch related to uncertainty of the Mexican election and the NAFTA negotiations. Although we already prepaid the credit lines we acquired for this purpose, we still experienced some impact in the third quarter. As a result of the higher cost of funding, the NIM contracted 60 basis points year over year, ending at 8.1%. However, similar to the leasing yield, we are expecting a recovery in the margins going forward. OPEX for the quarter was 291 million pesos. Recall that in the third quarter of 2017, expenses were partially offset by a non-recurring reduction of 63 million pesos or 44 million pesos net income of tax. Therefore, using the adjusted three-quarter OPEX as a base, OPEX as a percentage of revenues improved by 90 basis points year over year in the third quarter of 2018 due to a more efficient operating structure. As a result, operating income for the quarter reached 660 million pesos, a 12% increase compared to the 589 million pesos of recurring operating income in the third quarter of 2017. Consolidated net income for the quarter reached 545 million pesos during the quarter, a 2.8% increase versus the recurring net income for the third quarter of last year. The company past due loans reached 466 million pesos, of which two-thirds were from the operating lease portfolio and the rest was related to the factoring and auto loan business. The NPL ratio rose slightly quarter over quarter to 0.95% at the close of the third quarter from 0.84% at the end of the second quarter of this year. Another new metric we are using, the adjusted NPL ratio, considers the full amount of lease receivables, This figure improved to 2.7% versus 3.3% at the end of the second quarter of this year, and from 3.2% at the end of the third quarter of last year. The allowance for loan losses coverage for the company's NPLs was 107%. If you recall, last quarter we announced the decision to further strengthen best practices and more closely adhere to regulations of the Mexican Banking and Securities Commission, CNBV, by modifying the methodology for provisioning expected losses. This increased our allowance for NPLs. It is important to highlight that Unifin maintains ownership of the assets client lease, and both book and recovery value are not considered implicitly in the allowance coverage. As of September 30th, total assets increased 25%, mainly due to the growth of the total portfolio and net fixed assets during the quarter. When compared to the second quarter of this year, cash and total assets declined because the company ended up prepaying credit facilities throughout the third quarter of 2018. Consequently, financial liabilities also decreased. The current cost of funding is 9.9% versus 9.6% at the close of the third quarter of last year. Notwithstanding that the reference rates increased by 75 basis points versus 6 basis points increase in our cost of funding, providing the importance of the conservative measures of the company took to shield the balance sheet. Unifin average debt maturity profile stood at 53 months vis-a-vis 38 months of the portfolio, and all of our U.S. dollar denominated debt is fully hedged to maturity. Stockholders' equity stood at 2.1 billion pesos in the third quarter, a 113% increase versus the third quarter of last year, explained by the capital infusion related to the perpetual notes, which are classified and treated as equity. In addition to retained earnings, excluding the mark-to-market, Unifin capitalization ratio was 19.3%, up from 17.3% reported in the second quarter, a solid metric that we expect will allow the company to sustain growth going forward and improve its capital structure. We are confident that these results are but a first step towards achieving our primary goal of improving our profitability and, combined with the strategic plan we shared at the beginning of the call, we will be able to further capitalize on our leadership in the Mexican financial market. Now let me talk a little bit about financing. To achieve our strategic plan, we expect to require about $1 billion in financing for next year and to cover partial refinancing of current debt as well as working capital needs. Knowing how important it is to have an efficient capital structure and attractive funding, we will seek the best market alternatives and look to continue diversifying our funding sources. At this point, I will also like to highlight that we have been focusing on identifying the most efficient capital allocation. Following this analysis, we made a decision to significantly increase our share repurchase activity. Therefore, during the quarter, we bought back almost 8 million shares. We aim to improve the liquidity of the stock, but most importantly, we believe that the stock price has a vast upside. Going forward, we will continue this activity as needed, as we believe that it is an effective way of returning value to our investors. Considering the number of shares outstanding, our trailing 12-month earnings per share is 5.46 pesos versus 4.46 pesos at the third quarter of last year, and the analyzed EPS stands at 6.73 pesos. And with that, I will now take questions. Operator, we're ready for the Q&A.
At this time, if you'd like to ask a question, please press the star and one keys on your touchtone telephone keypad. Keep in mind that you may remove yourself from the question queue at any time by pressing the pound key. And we'll take our first question from Alonso Garcia with Credit Suisse. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Good morning, everyone. Thanks for taking my question. My question is on the margin side, trying to get a bit more color on the outlook for the coming quarters and in 2019. As we did see a rebound, but not able to fully revert the decline in the second quarter, despite a likely pickup in down payments due to higher originations on the leasing portfolio. And also, if you could provide more detail on the interest expense side, which increased by 12% in the quarter, despite a decline of 10% in financial liabilities. Thank you.
Hi, Alonso. Related to the NIM, well, as you know, we're in the
I would say, turning point in which the company will start materializing going forward the potential of a NIM recovery, of a yield recovery in the leasing portfolio. You have to take into consideration that there was, as previously said throughout the call, there was a slowdown in the originations overall in the year, no? And the pickup started happening in the origination started happening towards the end of this past third quarter, no? The reason why? Because, I mean, there was still a lot of noise related to the economic outlook, NAFTA, and additionally, people were coming back from summer holidays, no? So in reality, most of the conversion in our pipeline happened towards the end of the quarter. We're yet to see part of the lag on revenue accrual happening towards the end of the or towards the beginning of the fourth quarter, no? And we do continue expecting that the trends over new originations and conversion progress will get better as the time goes by, no? So that will definitely contribute a little bit more with that. Also, we're not expecting our demands on the side of the clients to keep, increasing the tenor of the leasing contracts. So with this consideration, we're also not expecting a deterioration from this point going forward, no? And lastly, to talk about the interest expense, no? As we said throughout the speech, basically we have around roughly four months of definitely higher interest expense related to the pickup in the withdrawal from credit facilities. We started paying those facilities, I would say, a few weeks after the results of the election, and once we saw that the result of the election was showing that everything was going to be stable, no? And so that's when we took the decision to start prepaying, but that significantly did impact the interest expense, no? Now that we have prepaid that, going forward, the expectation is for interest expense to normalize. And hence, the stability on the NIM should be happening going forward. No.
Thank you, David. Do you have a? I think last quarter you mentioned 120 bps negative impact on the margin side from the liquidity. Do you have a sense on what was the impact in margins this quarter?
For the let's say 9 months of 2018. The impact overall on the increase in the cost of funding was around only 6 basis points, or 150 million pesos. Okay, whereas the rest of the increase, around 1.1 billion pesos, was coming in the amount of the excess withdrawals that we took upon the credit facilities.
Perfect. Thank you very much. And finally, do you have a sense on the margin performance, or either leasing yield or NIM, considering, I mean, adjusted for the down payments, which of course are can result in a more volatile behavior of the NIM due to the higher or lower originations per quarter?
Not a sensibility per se. No, not at this point. Sorry.
Okay, thank you very much.
And we'll take our next question from Carlos Rivera with Barclays. Please go ahead, your line is open.
Hi, good morning everyone. Thanks for the opportunity to ask questions and also congratulations on the new appointment. My first question is regarding the refinancing needs. Just wanted to get a little bit more color about what are the implications of that in terms of issuing or retiring. Instruments, is the purpose of these to reduce the bank debt? How should we think that 1 billion financing needs for next year that you mentioned are going to be met? That'll be my first question. And I'll have the second one after. Thank
you. Hi, Carlos. Yes, I mean, we are providing that number to provide some color for next year. As you're aware, we are highly sensitive to the cost of funding. This is our source of growth. On a regular year, our funding, it's basically 40% comes from market securitizations, 40% from international notes, and 20% of banking facilities. We have the flexibility to move through the year on depending either market conditions or the cost of funding on each different instrument. At this point, we know how much we need to raise, no, in order to pay some of the maturities that we have next year and also for funding of our expected growth. However, I cannot provide you with any color of how it's going to be the breakdown because, as I said, it's going to depend on what will be the best and more efficient way of funding the company for next year. No?
Okay, but just to have a broad sense, do you have any particular targets? I mean, banks' loans are the most expensive one, and securitizations are the cheaper one. You would like to have some diversified mix, of course, to improve your rating. How should we think about these long-term that you want to achieve in an environment that rates are going higher, but you want to achieve some savings from your financing costs?
Yeah, sure. I mean, for sure, we're going to be accessing the local market in the near future. We haven't been in the local markets in through this year just because of the volatility that we have seen in the local markets as we speak. However, for sure, we're going to be accessing again the market securitization market. And also, we are analyzing for issuing some international notes in the second or in the third quarter of next year.
Oh, okay. That's very helpful. And my second question is more regarding to the implications of to expenses from your strategy of shifting more toward an advisory role. Is there any high run cost that we should expect going forward? I mean, Unison has been able to achieve a lot of operating leverage and grow revenues significantly higher than expenses. Is there a new OPEX that we should expect recurringly as a result of this advisory strategy?
No, not necessarily. Some of the investments that I mentioned in the call have been carried out in the first 9 months of the year. So in the event that we will need to invest a little further, it will be marginal, no?
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
And we'll take our next question from Jason Malin with Scotiabank. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Yes, hi. I wanted to see if you can provide an update on the growth prospects for the core leasing business. Talk about pipeline, where you see it, conversion, and where you think that can go from here. We've seen growth in the portfolio slow down in the third quarter for reasons that you've been discussing. If you can talk about the demand for your leasing product and what are the dynamics in the market that's driving this slowdown? Thank you.
Well, the dynamics that drove the slowdown have already been discussed. I mean, if we analyze the full year in Mexico, we experienced two major issues, one with the Mexican presidential election and the other with the uncertainty about NAFTA. As I said, I mean, the election has already been defined with Andrés Manuel López Obrador being now the elected president, and he's going to be taking office on December the 1st. However, there are still some signs out there in the environment that pose a little bit of uncertainty regarding the how this government is going to behave. We are positive that if AMLO and Morena, let's say, fulfill the expectation on growth and supporting the middle class, it's going to be on very beneficial for the company since it's our target. No? Those, the SME sector, as you know, it's our main target. So that will be a very good news and very positive for the company. However, for example, being now discussing and taking into consultation the new airport posts a lot of uncertainty for some of the larger investments that the company is expecting to receive, and that, of course, provides with some uncertainty. So getting to the point on how do we see the fourth quarter, we see it a strong quarter. As I said, the main focus of let's say, this new administration is going to be focusing on profitability. And that, of course, put some more restraints on growth. But we believe that with all these initiatives that we're going to be putting in place on the commercial side are going to be more than enough to offset, let's say, these incremental requirements on the credit analysis and on the profitability side. So we expect a strong quarter, and that's the only thing that I can give you, no?
What about the pipeline now? What about, can you give us a comment on where you see the pipeline now and how you see conversion of that pipeline going forward? Maybe not for the fourth quarter, but just in a longer-term perspective.
In a longer-term perspective, we continue to see a very strong backlog. The numbers that we have disclosed in the past are around 50 to 60 billion pesos, and those continue to be there. The conversion rate on that should continue being on a 45 to 50%, as we have done in the past. And the challenge right now is to increase that conversion rate in the long term.
Can you give us a sense of how has that pipeline, has it remained stable? Because I think the last number you talked about with us was around 60 billion, but I don't think we've heard 60 billion pesos. I don't think we've heard an update on that. Is it increasing? Is it decreasing? We can't calculate the conversion if we don't have that pipeline or backlog.
Yeah, but if I give you that pipeline, I will implicitly give you guidance for the year.
Okay. Okay. But is it increasing, decreasing? Any kind of color you can provide would be helpful.
I think I will say that it's stable, but we are targeting on a better way. Let me put it that way.
Okay. Thank you very much.
We'll take our next question from John Howe with Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hey guys, thanks for the call and the questions, but my questions have been asked already. Thanks.
We'll take our next question from Chelsea Colon with Aegon. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
And thank you for the call. I was just looking for a little more color on the financial need for next year. It seems, if I'm looking at this correctly, your short-term debt's only about $200 million. So, and the incremental $800 million then for growth is pretty significant. I'm wondering if that's coming from something else more than just portfolio growth. Like, are you investing in additional IT or something to that effect to improve efficiency? If you could just provide a little more color around the financial need, that would be helpful.
Sure, Chelsea. No, I mean, to a point, you're right on the maturities that we're seeing in the financial liabilities. The thing is that a few of our securitizations in the local market are not due in the immediate short term, but the amortizing period of these structures is starting to happen. No. So it means that we are out of the revolver period in which we can take the excess cash from those securitizations. So in reality, what we're facing now with this is basically a negative carry on the proceeds that are being collected month to month on these securitizations. Ideally, what we're looking for is to refinance these securitizations in the local market with new securitizations and with either public or private here in Mexico, no? And the rest of the financing that we require for 2019 will come in the means of either issuing internationally or basically secure some lending from banks and additional considerations. I don't know if this answers your question.
Okay, so is there any way you can quantify the amount of securitizations that have this negative carry versus how much of the funding need is related to portfolio growth?
I would say that 45% of the debt we're looking to raise for next year, around 45%, is refinanced. And again, those securitizations can amortize individually. It's not that Unifin needs to put cash in it, but we rather extend the revolving period to issuing a new securitization and basically take out the portfolio, put it in the new trust, and start benefiting again from the cash withdrawal from the securitization as a cash flow measure, no?
Okay, sorry, you said 45% of that is related to securitization?
Yeah.
Okay, got it. And then just one other question. I'm wondering, what is the reason for the extension in terms of the lease portfolio? Is that a request from clients? Is that a result of new
clients? It's driven by the demand of our clients, mostly because it makes a lot more sense for clients to lease on a long-term basis when they're leasing assets that the useful life is significantly larger than the one in the lease contract. So it's better to match basically the depreciation with the life of the asset per se, no? So if they're using a production line or an asset that has an extended maturity, it makes more sense to have a on a cash flow perspective, it makes more sense to have a lower, let's say, payment on a monthly basis, no, and match it properly with the depreciation of the asset, no.
Just one last question, if I may.
Sure.
Kind of related to that, what are you seeing in terms of the competitive environment, especially from the larger banks? Like, I know Santander was interested in expanding in leasing, for instance. Are you seeing any change in the competitive dynamics that might impact your ability to pass through the higher funding costs to your lease rates?
No. We're not expecting or anticipating any major shift on that. However, as I said during the call, we are anticipating to some, let's say, increase competition out there, and that's why we are making all these initiatives in our sales force to be more efficient, more strong, and more customer driven.
Okay, thank you.
We'll take our next question from Carlos Flores with Santander. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, Sergio, thanks for taking my question. Just a follow-up question on the expansion of the maturity of the leasing loans. Could you please give us some color of what percentage of lease loans have been restructured? I mean, how much of the current portfolio have you given the option to extend the duration of the already given leases? Thank you.
No. The duration of the lease is settled when we sign the contract. It's not that we are refinancing or restructuring the lease to a larger maturity. The demand most of the demand that we receive right now, this has to do with 48 months on for the lease, and that's the reason why we make the comparison vis-a-vis 2015, no, in which we were working more on 36 months leases.
So this extended duration is for new loans, right?
That's correct.
Thank you.
We'll take our next question from Gilberto Garcia with Barclays. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for the call. So talking a little bit about what the incoming administration has said, and understanding obviously that there is still quite a bit of uncertainty, but they have talked about boosting the participation of smaller companies in infrastructure projects. Is that something that you believe could be a driver for you? And if so, would that require you potentially to increase your footprint, particularly in the south of Mexico? Thank you.
Yes, thank you for the question. Yes, we are considering that, and And of that, I mean, we are strengthening, for example, our Cancun and Merida offices, and we're going to be very, very close to the market needs. And yes, if that happens and if that materializes, we're going to be there for supporting that growth, that investment in infrastructure. And if we are on the need to open an additional offices there, we can do that. In that sense, one of the characteristics of Unifin is that we are very fast to make decisions and very fast to respond to whatever the market needs.
Thank you very much.
As a reminder, if you'd like to ask a question today, please press the star and one keys on your telephone keypad. Keep in mind, you may remove yourself from the question queue by pressing the pound key. We'll take our next question from Scott Thomas with Wasatch Advisors. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi. Thanks for the extra disclosures. Specifically on the leasing yield, I mean, two of the main headwinds, the maturity extension seems to have run its course, and then the origination is improving as well. So we no longer have these headwinds. Can you give us a sense, and I know you're low to provide any forward guidance, but just a sense as to the magnitude of improvement, just how to think about it over the next year or two. Anything that could help would be great.
Yes, we're going to be working very hard to achieve that. And what I can tell you is that we are setting ourselves a target for, like we said, the next 12 months, perhaps to increase or to improve that on 100 to 150 bps.
Perfect. Thank you.
We'll take our next question from Natalia Corfield with J.P. Morgan. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi. Good morning to everybody. I have, like, two questions. I think a very simple one on collections. If you could provide how much you have collected year-to-date, and also if you have your expectations for 2019. And my other question is on your share buybacks, and apologies because I don't have all the details on it, but you said that you have been having these maturities from the securitization that you have to meet, and you placed a perpetual note this year in order to boost your capitalization. So I'm wondering what's the rationale behind this share buyback right now? Those are my two questions. Thank you.
Yes, on the rationale on the share buyback is that we did a capital allocation analysis, and we decided that was the best way to allocate some of the capital. Of course, when you see the numbers that we show on how many shares we bought and the amount related to that is not significant in the sense of deteriorating the capital structure. The other thing is that the company perceives that the current valuation of the stock is low, no? So we're gonna be there for supporting the stock price and also buying shares because we consider that to be a very good investment. And going forward, it will depend on the market condition of how the stock is trading and of course the outlook that we may have for the growth of the company. The first question was related to the collection, if I am okay, or what was the question? Sorry.
Yeah, how much you have collected. If you don't have the entire number, if you provide for leasing, that would be very helpful.
But can you, I guess, clarify a little bit what you mean, Natalia, please, in
yes,
terms of collections? I mean, do you mean accruals of the portfolio, or?
Yes, how much did you get from your portfolio this year? And how much do you expect to get next year?
So again, in I would say to understand properly, you mean accruals? How much of the portfolio has become due throughout the year, or do you mean new originations?
How much was your cash flow from your leasing portfolio this year? How much did you collect?
So the cash flow of the leasing portfolio is around 1 billion pesos, 1.1 billion pesos on a monthly basis.
Okay. And this should be a number that we can consider a number that's like for 2019, you probably will continue to have 1.1 billion pesos per month.
It should increase as we have more portfolio originations, no? But at least 1.1, yes, going forward, at least 1.1, yeah.
All right. Thank you very much.
Welcome.
We'll take our next question from Jonathan Swark with DebtWire. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi. How are you? Thank you very much for providing the adjusted NPL. I mean, this is something that's very helpful. Can you share how much it was for 4Q17 and 1Q18? And then I have another question.
Hi, Jonathan. Let me look for the number. If I don't have it with me right now, I will share with you. Okay, I have it for the full year of 2017. It's in the press release, and it was 3.3. And then historically, basically, for 2016, it was 3.3. It doesn't shift that much. I would say it generally stands at 3.5%. But I'll follow up with the number directly.
Yeah, Monday, don't worry. And the second question is, given that you have the asset, we know that this is not the real loss. The loss is lower than this 2.7. Do you have an estimate of how much these assets cover the expected losses? A historical average or something?
Let me put it that way. If we were on a stress analysis and all of our NPLs, let's say, materialize and we will need to sell the asset, the break-even for that will be 50% for the commercial value.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
We'll take our next question with Justin Ziegler from Eaton Vance Management. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, thanks for the call. Just sort of following up on next year's funding considerations. As you think about it, and as you think about whether you're tapping local or international markets, how are you considering, like, the target leverage for this kind of business going forward? Because you see the equity growing, and it's nice to see, and so the debt to equity has come down. But as you think you're growing the business through unsecured funding or secured funding, like, where do you want to be? Is it want to be 3x debt to equity or 5x debt to equity? And then on top of that, as you think about a mix of funding, do you want to be more secured funding? Like, I think I saw 60% secured right now versus unsecured. Where do you want to go in terms of that metric?
The mix should continue to go as similarly posted before. In terms of leverage, we're targeting to virtually maintain the same amount of leverage that you see, or the same metric of leverage that you see today, somewhere along the line of 3 to 3.5 times at the most. In terms of secured versus unsecured, like we said earlier, the idea is to, on an optimal basis, the idea is to use 40% of secured funding, then 40% of international or unsecured, and then 20% of banking facilities, which in the end most end up being additional secured funding, no? As you do the rollover to first you use them as warehouse, and then once you issue, you prepay the banking facilities, and it's a cycle, no? So going forward, the expectation is to remain within the same in all considerations, no? On a quarterly basis, you can have some partial offsets, no, because of how market conditions are, or because you're issuing a securitization or a particular transaction. But on a 12-month basis or on an annualized basis, you maintain the same basically funding structure going forward.
Okay, and kind of following up on that, as you think about why you're approaching the international markets, is it because you're up against capacity considerations in the local markets, or is it a purely the interest rate kind of arbitrage, or?
No, in reality, it's more because we're looking to have an extended tenor on the liabilities, which it's hard to get in the local markets, no? So partially it's because of that. We're also, when we approach the market, we're very keen on analyzing potential arbitrage between the cost of funding and the swapping curves and so on, no? So at this point it has worked for the company, and we will try to do the best going forward in these terms also.
Okay, and one last question, and it's going back to what Natalia had asked about earlier in terms of collections and really in terms of how you recognize that cash flow from lease payments. Is what kind of protections or controls do you have in terms of getting that cash into your coffers from your lessees, and how does that sort of dynamic work?
I mean, for many of most of our customers, we have what we say a domiciliation on the account. So we charge them on a monthly basis the rent and for their checking accounts, and let's say that's the way that we operate. There is no protection on that, and that's why we have a very robust collections department. For those who delay 1 or 2 days on their payment, we start calling them and asking what's going on or whatever. No, but that's the way that we operate.
And if I recall, there was some sort of type of a lien on the customer, right? Like you had recourse to their assets, or legally.
Oh, hold on one second. Okay, sorry, Justin. Can you repeat? We're just trying to figure out your question properly.
It really is quite simple. I think if I recall when we spoke once, there was some legal mechanism or there was some lien against the
Oh, you mean about the legal depository?
Right, correct.
Yeah. No, the legal depository figure, yes. It's a personal guarantee you get from either the owner or the main shareholder of the company and so on, who signs on a personal basis in a figure similar to what would be a custodian of the asset. So they become liable or responsible of having to return the asset if they, let's say, do not comply with the contractual obligations, no? And in this case, we can go to a public notary, notify them, and eventually to a judge, no? And ask for the asset back, and if not, it becomes a criminal offense.
Okay. And that process usually takes how long, just out of curiosity?
I mean, it's variable because, for instance, for transportation equipment and for cars and vehicles and so on, it might be fairly expedite, no? For other processes, it can take a little bit longer, but I would say overall, around 3-6 months in some cases, and then in the most complex, we've taken a year at the most.
Okay. Thanks for your patience. I appreciate it.
No, you're welcome.
And once again, if you would like to ask a question today, please press the star and one keys on your touchtone telephone keypad. We'll take our next question from Michael Galvez with GBM. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Thank you for the call. Could you please give us some color on the capitalization strategy for the future? You have now you have plenty of room, plenty of space after the issuance of the subordinated notes. But could you tell us what happened with the negotiations with third parties, or what you're expecting for the future?
Yes. What we're expecting, at least on the upcoming 2 to 3 years, is that we're not going to need any capital injection. The current level of capitalization, as we said, is close to 20%. But if we see on the downside, the covenants that we had on that number are that the capitalization ratio not be less than 10%. So we still have a lot of room to continue growing without jeopardizing the strength, the capital structure of the company. And that's what I'm very confident to say, that in the next 2 to 3 years, we're not going to need any capital injection. And negotiation with third parties are there none as we speak. So we're okay the way that we're operating right now.
And what about rating agencies? Like, rating agencies consider only 50% of the subordinated note as capital, as equity. And some investors, we do the same. So, like, what's, like, the driver for them?
Yes, on that number, the capitalization ratio is 16.5% on the rating agency's methodology. And of course, we also track that number because we're pushing to have an improvement of our rating. So we are very close to that ratio, and if needed, we are going to do whatever we need to do to improve that.
Okay, thank you.
We'll take our next question from Guillermo Diego with Santander. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Yes, hello. Congratulations on the results. Nice to know, no, the uncertainty is decreasing, the growth rate for the end of the quarter is accelerating, and maybe the positive view on the fourth quarter, no? Also, thank you for the data that on a stress basis, I think you could liquidate, no, at 50% of the portfolio and break even. I was just wondering if you could tell us maybe what percentage of the portfolio is guaranteed by additional guarantees, no, beside the assets.
I will estimate from, like I will say, from 40 to 50% of the portfolio has additional guarantees.
Great. Thank you.
And next we'll take a follow-up question from Chelsea Colon with Aegon. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, just a question on the NPL ratio. I know that it remains fairly low based on the way that you calculate it, but it has been slowly trending upward. So I'm just wondering where you expect that to peak and where the inflection point may be, I guess, and just what you're seeing there.
Hi, Chelsea. Yeah, that's... For sure, you can count on that we are providing or we are tracking that number on a daily basis. We have strengthened our collections department to improve that. However, sometimes it's a market condition, but our target is to be below 1%. So that the number, even though it has increased a little bit, continues to be within our internal metrics on performance. But of course, we're working very hard to reduce that.
What do you attribute the recent performance to? Is it mostly the uncertainty, or are there certain sectors that have given you more trouble than others?
It has also, for example, a seasonality effect. No, in the summer, a lot of the decision making guys that basically are the guys who sign some of the banking accounts or these type of things. I mean, we need to put on perspective who our customers are not at the office, and that sometimes delays the payment. Also, you need to consider that we start recording NPLs after 30 days of non receiving a payment, and that also it's a very strict measure when compared to the traditional bank that starts to consider that after 90 days of non-payment. So that also has a seasonality effect.
So even the new metric that you're providing, is that based on 30 days as well, or is that 90 days?
No, the new metric is on 90 days to make that comparable to the rest of the banks and financial institutions.
But, Chelsea, just as a mean of giving you some color on the industry, no? If you look at the whole financial sector in Mexico, the adjusted NPL or the current methodology, the average for the industry would be over 5%, No, so Unifinis is still on a sweet spot on a conservative analysis when it comes to its NPLs. No.
And once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press the star and one keys on your telephone keypad. Next, we'll take another follow-up from Michael Galvez with GBM. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hello again. Sorry, just a follow-up on that NPL ratio. I'm looking at the third quarter press release, and you are reporting now an NPL adjusted level in a graph of 2.7%. How are you calculating that level? What is it considering?
It's basically the full outstanding amount of the accruals that have been done, also of the past due loan portfolio, in addition to a principal of the remainder of the leasing contract. No, so basically it's exactly the same as any other bank would do.
Oh, so that's the one that we usually ask you, right?
That's the one. Yeah, that's the one you usually ask.
Perfect. Ah, okay, perfect.
Again,
thank
just
you
to just try to be more clear, Michelle, this metric does not consider either recovery value or book value of the asset, no? Which is also very important to take into consideration.
Exactly. Thank you. Perfect.
And we'll take our next question, another follow-up from Scott Thomas with Wasatch Advisors. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, just a quick follow-up on that. I mean, if you were to take your leasing portfolio, given the structure of contracts, I've heard you say the number in the past, but your loss given default or the amount you've ever written off is something like 10 million pesos. Is that right? I mean, given where your coverage is at and just the bilateral nature of these contracts and the fact that you own the assets, I assume the amount written off is almost de minimis.
Yeah, you're correct, Scott. That's the amount that we have had over the last 3 to 5 years, roughly. And that, of course, it's a consequence of how robust are our operations in terms of the guarantees and everything that we put on them. And most of the cases, we are able to collect 100% of the lease, no?
Perfect. Thank you.
Our next question comes from another follow-up from Guillermo Diego with Santander. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Maybe just wondering, why do you have such a strict guide on the NPL that you mentioned, close to 1%, if you are a leasing company and you have the collateral of the value of the asset, and on 40% of the portfolio you have additional guarantees? Why such a strict NPL and why the focus on NPL at all?
Because thank you again for the question, because that's part of our mojo, of our philosophy of doing business. We have been so successful and being very, very efficient in our operations because we put a lot of strict internal controls to continue operating at this very sound financial health.
Okay, thanks for the disclosure. Maybe it's a little bit more than expected.
Okay.
And there are no further questions on the line at this time. I'll return the call to our speakers.
Well, thank you very much for joining us today. As we said, we're going to be focusing on profitability going forward and of course of growth. Thank you very much. And if you have any further questions, you have David's team at your disposition. Thank you.